Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and I'm here with this year's Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly candidate. Joining me in the studio are A.J. Pierce, Alan Bailey, Kevin Gadsey, Joel Jackson, Kent Colby, and Sue Pickerel. Welcome to you all. If you have a question for our candidates, please call 225-9655. But first, let's have each of you give a little introduction and say why you're running for local office. And we're going to start with A.J. Pierce.
I'm A.J. Pierce, and I'm third generation Ketchikanite. And I've been gone for a while, and I've been down south and getting my education, and knew that I wanted to come back to Ketchikan eventually to make an impact. I just didn't quite know what that looked like at the time. So moving back in 2015 as a single parent, I have been a part of many nonprofits here in Ketchikan, and volunteering and being a part of the community on that level. So the reason why I decided to
for the Borough Assembly was because I've had a few people in the community that have come up and asked me to run, and I had more reasons to say yes than no. And just growing up here and just having a wonderful childhood and being a part of Ketchikan, in the early 80s, I wanted to come back and give back to the community. And for me, running for the Borough Assembly, that's what that looks like.
Okay, thank you very much. We had a little bit of mic difficulty there. I hope people were able to hear the beginning of what you had to say. Next is Alan Bailey.
Thank you. Well, my name is Alan Bailey, and I have previously served 6 years as your assembly representative, one of which was as a vice mayor, and have served numerous chair or co-chairs of committees, and I believe I've had a positive impact on our community. My record reflects that I resist unnecessary taxation, and I am not a tax and spend representative. I carefully study the issues before our community and represent our community with respect and fairness. I take a reasoned, common sense approach to legislation, and I take great effort to listen to his constituents, and I respect those with differing opinions. I am a strong advocate of our education system, our schools, public safety, senior and veteran services as well, and I advocate for the public arts programs and our cultural community. It's always been about service to others for me, without agenda, without any other purpose or reason. It's just simply serving others, and this is a great community, and I wish to be a part of it and contribute. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. And Kevin Gadsey.
Thank you, Layla. My name is Kevin Gadsey, and I've been in Ketchikan since 2007, mostly. I came here for a position and fell in love with the community many years ago. Had to leave in 2013 to pursue education, and went to Ireland and got a master's degree in public advocacy and activism. But during the time I've been here in Ketchikan and also in Missouri, right after I got my master's degree, working as a lobbyist, I've always had a lot of interest in working for public policy change, making a difference in the community for those who are working the hardest and also struggling to make ends meet, make this a community they want to stay in, and to make decisions that are fair and balanced for the community, but also developing a community and developing and advocating for community programs that are going to enhance our lives, from the arts to the recreation programs to the schools that are so important to our students. During my first round here in Ketchikan, 2007 through 2013, I did a lot of work with City Council and the Borough Assembly to help get our youth center down at on Park Avenue to be able to make a lot of things more accessible for people with disabilities. We also wrote together, and I was overseeing the project to write a a 200-page report to enhance our transportation program. It was federally required, and we brought in about 5 buses out of that for the borough, and several million dollars, and also 4 buses for local nonprofit agencies came because of that. And all of that together, again, with my time as a lobbyist for social issues, health care, and disability issues in Missouri at the General Assembly, I really just wanted to be able to offer support on the other side of the die. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Joel Jackson.
Hi. My name is Joel Jackson. I am a lifelong resident of Ketchikan, moved away to serve in the military. Have 3 kids that are wonderful, a huge family. We foster children. I would just add, as a young kid, I had a notion of service, public service, voting demonstrated to me by my mother repeatedly, and I strongly believe in public service and, you know, taking your kids to vote, those sorts of things. And why specifically I'm running for borough assembly is, in these times where the state of Alaska is cutting funding, what I hear and see at our local in our local leadership is a bit of fear. And I view our community, or if you will, like a stock. And the best time to buy a stock is when it's down. And right now what we don't need are people who are shrinking violets on these boards and in leadership roles. We need people who can advocate for the community, who believe in the future of Ketchikan, and who have a vested interest in the future of Ketchikan. And I'm that person. I think that there is a lot of opportunity in this town. People who come here remark about how wonderful it is. We have our own power. We have our own water. We are, by definition, waterfront property everywhere. And I want to bring that enthusiasm and that can-do attitude to the Borough Assembly, and I'm here to ask for your vote. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Kent Colby.
Hi, I'm Kent Colby. I have been in the news media for, I was telling the students last night, more than 30 years, but it's more like almost a half a century. And I have, in 2 different states, Alaska and Utah, interviewed almost everybody who's ever run for public office. And so after I retired from KTK in last April, I decided that it was my turn to be on the other side of the microphone and see if I can answer some of the questions. My big premise is economic diversity as well as economic development. I was here when the mill closed and saw what almost a single industry town, how that hurt us, albeit we still had fishing and tourism and all those things. So there's room for diversity and some more growth, and it's when I had the governor on the radio last year. The state of Alaska is suffering from that, having a single source income. And I don't want Ketchikan to get into that situation where we have declines because of it. So if we can, technology is something that we have not really pushed a lot in this community, and we're very ripe to do so.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerel.
Thank you so much, Layla. I've lived here in Ketchikan all my life. I'm a lifelong resident with Joel, and I actually worked with his mother, and she was always involved in public service in Ketchikan for many, many years. Friend is one of my dear friends. I've worked in Ketchikan for more than 30 years in public service. I've served 3 years on the Ketchikan School Board and the Ketchikan Indian Community Tribal Council, as well as statewide boards and commissions. I believe we've not yet seen the best of Ketchikan. And I think the next 5 years will be challenging, and we need people with a long-term commitment to our community to see us through the challenging times that we're going to be facing. There are 4 issues that I'm really concerned about, and we'll talk about those tonight. I'd like to kind of get into that a little bit more. But more than anything, what I want to see for Ketchikan is the ability for my children and grandchildren to stay here, to have opportunities, and to be able to have a way to make a living and stay right here in Ketchikan, so that I'm selfish. I'd like to have them with me. And that's what I want for the young people of this town, to be able to have that future. And as I said, we've not yet seen the best of Ketchikan. We have a lot more to offer, and I want to be a part of that planning and a part of that future.
Thank you very much. And again, to our listeners, if you have a question for our candidates, call 225-9655. This is an opportunity for you to directly question your want to be elected officials. And my first question is, what will be your top priority on the Assembly over the next 3 years? And some of you already answered that, but maybe you can expand upon it. We'll start with Alan Bailey this time.
I had that look to me, didn't I? One of the concerns that I really do have is the deferring cost of the state to our municipalities and to the borough governments. It's concerning. It would have a drier effect upon how we do our business in our community. It also can affect our school system in that I think Mr. Boyle had said it best, it's a moving target, their budgets. And so any effect that the state has in deferring those costs results in direct costs to us, and we are in need of determining how we can best accomplish or cushion that kind of deferred cost. An example is, and I was very pleased to be a part of this, where we established a reserve fund for school funding. I think they have a new name for it now. I think it's called the Student Funds or something like that, but currently it's at $2.4 million. Without any of these deferred costs, we have for FY 2020, we'll have about a $2.1 million deficit. That excludes any deferred costs that are going to be added to that. So those are concerning issues. An example is also you have an Economic Development Fund, which a lot of the granting agencies are concerned about. And we've been talking about this for some number of years. When I was on the Borough Assembly, we talked about that and how it was declining rapidly. Now it's got to the point where we may not have that fund at all. So there's some ideas that I certainly have and a common sense approach in how to deal with that issue. But that equals right now anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000. In that ballpark area. So those are the kinds of numbers that are out there that people are going to have to deal with. We're going to have to determine you do one of two things. Either you increase revenues or develop revenues, or you decrease services. Those are two options. And I think there's, frankly, a third one when you may be able to coordinate and collectively combine services that may be duplicative. So there's always a way to try to find a common sense approach, and that's how I approach these problems. And I can say, and most who know that I study the heck out of this stuff. I spend a lot of hours trying to do the right thing, or try to be well informed to make an informed decision. So that's. In a nutshell, that's where I'm at.
Thank you. And Joel Jackson?
Well, I think economic development is certainly a big concern. I would say that I have a little bit different take on that, in that there are huge opportunities for public and private partnerships with what's going on with the state right now. And a great example of that is the Ketchikan Regional Youth Facility, which closed about a year ago because the state could no longer afford to run it. So the city owns the property, takes the building back, has a building it doesn't know what to do with. You have a private enterprise, Wish, which needs a new building. And that is an example of how the municipality or the borough can work with a private entity in a public-private partnership. An area that the borough potentially could look at that, like Ada, would be the airport, which the airport is the only one in the state that's run by the borough, and that's an example of something you could do. I think people want to have schools that they can send their kids to and are proud of. Another area that's pretty interesting that's growing is in concerns, at least when I look online, is animal control. As you know, when I was younger, that was sort of a throwaway item. What I see more and more online is a lot more contentious rancor about what to do and how to react and how to respond. And I think over time we'll see more and more concerns expressed about that. It's a small part of the borough's oversight area, but it's one of those that definitely creates a lot of problems. One of the questions I received last night from the kids at the high school was consolidation. And I've always been an advocate that consolidation is not an economic or a cost-saving measure. It's never been about that for me. It's about speaking with one voice. And so I think any kind of partnership between municipalities and coordinating those expenses is going to become even more and more important. You know, an example is the libraries, where there's agreement between the borough and the city. And I would point out that the reserve fund for the school district was actually started in 2004, I believe, when I was on the school board. We were authorized to carry over, I think, up to $400,000. And so I'm glad to hear that that's continued to grow over the years, and we have that buffer. So thank you.
Thank you. And Sue Pickrell?
I think that one of the number one issues that we will be facing with the state deficit of, nearly $5 billion, is obviously our budget. And I think most important, we need a fiscally sound and responsible budget. And I think a lot of that has to do with planning. We have 8 months before we have to approve a budget. And so I think we have the time right now, instead of waiting until the state of Alaska, which they haven't yet in the last 3 years, figured out how to balance their budget, and they just keep delaying and delaying. And my fear is that they're going to put everything on the local boroughs and cities and say, you figure it out, because they don't want to. So we have to have a plan in place, and it's not going to be simple. And I think we've seen that over the last few months with local nonprofits that are just trying to get by. They need funding for the services that they provide that the borough can't provide, really. And so instead of pitting one group against another, instead of saying we're going to cut all programs across the borough by 10%, to me, that's not a reasoned approach. We need to have a plan in place for that to happen. And I think that plan can't happen unless there are many partners involved, and that is the borough assembly has to engage with the borough manager and the directors, and they've already started in that. They cut their budget, I think, by nearly 5% this year, which is a wonderful savings, and it was $780,000. And that's a great start. I also think that we have to have the public involved and ask them, what are your priorities? What services would you want to see cut, or would you not want to see cut? And what services are really important for you? We have to have that input from the public, and all of that has to do with planning. So those are the two issues I think that are very, very important. And finally, one of the most important things that we do as Borough Assembly is to approve a budget for the school district. And having sat three times on that school board, I didn't take it lightly when borough assembly members were trying to tell the school district, well, this is what you need to cut and that's what you need to cut, because that's the job of the school board. It really is. And so I feel that we have to have a sound fiscal plan in place for that school district, and that takes planning and working with the school board. And I think they used to call it the liaison committee, and now it's the Better Relations or Community Relations Committee that meets, and I think that has solved a lot of problems. I think we need to continue working, working together. And finally, for me, I think what's important to have people that have experience in making tough decisions, and I have that. But the other thing is, you can't take things personally. You have to look at this as working together, compromising, and coming up with the best plan possible. And nobody is going to be happy all the way around. It's everybody's going to have to give up a little bit, particularly with the kinds of budgets we're going to be looking at. So anyway, I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight, and to I hope people will call in and ask us questions, and this is a great process to go through. Thank you, Layla.
Thanks. Cooperative Relations Committee.
Cooperative Relations. There we go.
Kevin Gadsey.
Thank you, Layla. And I will just say that my first priority, if the voters do select me as one of the three candidates, is to listen and learn the first year, to be able to ask questions and to really be able to hear from the people in the community what their challenges are, what their focus is for where we need to improve Ketchikan. With that, we're also going to be asking questions about the budget and asking questions about where the money is actually going. I'm a full supporter of all the programs that make Ketchikan better that's provided to the borough, transportation, schools, recreation, animal control, and so on. But I also believe we can be champions for efficient government that's also effective. And part of that is to be able to ask those questions during the budget sessions and to really be able to identify ways that the teams can become more effective without micromanaging. And that's the trick. But I believe that my experience over the years as in nonprofit programs allows me to be able to see some of those things. And for instance, with the nonprofit grants, to be able to figure out ways that we can have more cooperative programs and crossovers between borough and nonprofit programs that will more effectively provide services to the community and save borough tax dollars.
Thank you very much. And Kent Colby.
So I say diverse economic development. Of course, all of the internal things we're talking about are important to all of us, but looking to the future, Ketchikan needs to be geared up for what may be inevitable, and we don't want to wait until it's too late, such as the Northwest Passage. As that becomes a major shipping route, Ketchikan is poised, as we were during the Gold Rush, not that I was here, that I got here just after that. That will be the second Gold Rush for Ketchikan. We have the real estate. We have the assets to be a major shipping hub to service that transportation corridor. We talk about developing Gravina Island, talk about a free port where we could store merchandise that is and goods that are going to be transported across the Northwest Passage. Just heard on the radio as I was driving in here that the cruise ship that has been making the annual trip is taking a two-year hiatus, and folks in Nome are kind of saying, ouch. So the state office has just released a draft of things that they would like to see happen in Alaska in order to diversify the state, and almost all of them are talking points that I would like to talk about. We don't have that much time. So 5% increase in infrastructure. Ketchikan is in a unique situation. We have our own water. We have our own power. Technology industry needs water and power. We are, like 80% capacity on our power grid. So if a mine on Prince of Wales Island opens up and they do some processing on Gravina Island, it will max us out. If we have any other larger industries come in, it will max us out. We need to build on our infrastructure as we have it in order to be ready for that next big business so that we don't say, sorry, we're going to have a brownout if you come into town. Things like server farms, things like call centers, all are very viable options for a community like Ketchikan. I have the luxury of living and working in Ketchikan for clients in the lower 48 because we have that infrastructure, because we have jet service in and out every day, so when I do have to go south. But so I telecommute. I'm serving million-dollar companies on a regular basis from my office here in Ketchikan. And I think there are a lot of people who would like to do that, and we could invite them to give it a try.
Thank you very much. And A.J. Pierce.
Thank you, Leila. One of my top priorities for running for Borough of Assembly is a two-prong, and one of those is small business. You know, we have a lot of conversation about, you know, heavy tourist industry, and we are thin in the winter. And I am really looking forward to working with people here in Ketchikan that have got those like minds and who are ready to, you know, be able to approach that look. So one of those things, you know, that we can more work together, I think in that sense, is, you know, there's a lot of really intelligent people, you know, here in Ketchikan that just want to link arms and grow our economy together. And it seems like it's a little bit more fragmented, you know, and so coming together and having that conversation you know, on how that looks, I'm really looking forward to that. As I sit down with voters and I sit down with past mayors and assembly members, I continue to do that. You know, it's really interesting how people have got their viewpoints and have some really enriching ideas to bring to the table. And I look forward to sitting on the borough with the other six and being able to bring those approaches to Ketchikan. As well as one of the really big conversations that goes on is the Economic Development Fund. And you know, we've been scrambling recently on how are we going to fund that? What is that going to look like? And you know, we want to look at these particular taxes, and you know, and I really feel like it's coming down to self-sustainability, and being able to approach our nonprofits in that. There are many nonprofits here in Ketchikan that are extremely successful, and they have not taken a dime from the borough, from the state, or from the feds. So I know that it can be done. It is proven that it can be done right here in this little tiny community. And I think that those are the people that we need to continue to talk to and have those conversations with and learn from, because if it can be done, it can be duplicated.
Thank you very much. And we do have a caller on the line, and that's Deborah. Deborah, go ahead with your question. Are you still there, Deborah? She may have given up. She called right when I asked that first question, so she had to wait through. Hopefully she'll call back with her question. But in the meantime, I'll go ahead with my next one. Oh, apparently she is on the line. Hold on. Deborah, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead with your question.
Okay. As you know, there have been several proposals that have come before the borough for funding nonprofits now that the Economic Development Fund has become depleted. And some of those were to remove exemptions on hotels and lodgings, which would raise the virtual tax on them to 17%, to lease and develop, to tax nonprofits. In other words, to take money from them that you would then give back to them, and then to lease and develop the borough lands, and that one was not even considered. And a beverage container tax, what came before them, which they rejected. And then one assembly member has proposed a sales tax increase, which has not come formally before the borough, but none of these have worked out in front of the borough assembly. So what would you propose, or would you pick any one of these as a way to fund nonprofits if you believe they can be funded by the borough?
Okay, thank you very much for your question, Deborah. That was actually on my list as well, so like minds. So the Economic Development Fund and grants for nonprofits, how are we going to work through that issue? And we're going to start with Kevin Gatzi.
Thank you, Leila and Deborah. This is an incredibly complex issue, and it's not necessarily going to have an immediate and easy solution. But I do believe that there are some interesting alternatives on the table. that Deborah has already mentioned, to be able to pursue solutions. What I will say is what I said when I was at as a nonprofit director here in the community, I was at a meeting in late June with the borough staff about this exact issue, and I said that we need to pursue using a scalpel on this issue instead of a hammer, or trying to put all the nonprofits into one fund. We need to figure out where we can best put the programs and fund the programs, either from the recreation budget or education budget or general budget or other taxes such as the marijuana, tobacco taxes. And I still believe that. Now, the question, you still have to find the funding from those, find the funding for some of the nonprofits that don't fit in those areas. And I would just say that that is a place where we're going to have to tighten our belt in some areas to be able to fund those nonprofits if they are a priority for the borough. One thing that the city and borough and Juneau has done for a long time is that they've used alcohol and tobacco excise tax to fund the nonprofits. But they also have chosen in years past certain topics, such as this year it's going to be youth and the arts, and the next year it's seniors and homelessness, that they're able to, that every nonprofit can reach into and gauge their principles and their grant proposals around that. I believe that that's an option on the table too. Finally, the idea of the excise tax on the 5-cent excise tax on bottles does have some merit to it. I did not really support it up until at the time, because we literally only had one week to research that. And the Tuesday morning before, after Labor Day, before that meeting, I spent 2 hours on the phone trying to call old contacts in Baltimore, where I did my internship in 2014, to try to find out how that exact same model of tax had gone forward in Baltimore, where they had it for 2 cents on each bottle from the 1980s up until 2012, and they just increased it to 5 cents in 2012. Unfortunately, Baltimore was very, very tight-lipped, and a lot of my individual contacts were not available at the time. If that issue were to come back, we would definitely be looking at trying to research Baltimore to get data, because the bottom line on this is we want to see if that typed tax does generate enough revenue. We were guessing at numbers at $450,000 revenue that it might bring in, and we weren't really sure about that, to be honest. I think that there was, but we want to be able to have evidence-based decisions and science-based decisions. Thank you.
Thank you. And Sue Pickrell.
Well, right off the bat, I'm going to say that I support the nonprofits that provide services, much-needed services in this community. You know, there's the homeless shelter and Rendezvous that serve the seniors, and Ketchikan Senior Services that have been here for more than 40 years. Many of these programs provide vital life-saving services that the borough, honestly, I don't think we have any business providing those unless we have the powers to do so. I'd like to see it brought to the voters. Does this community want social services powers within the borough? Can we authorize that? And if we can, then we should pay for it. And if that means that we have to find the funding for that because we are empowered to do so, and we partner with those community partners, the nonprofit groups, to provide those services, then so be it. but it should be the community deciding, because ultimately, if it's anywhere from I've heard as much as $500,000 with at least one new group coming in asking for money this year, then at some point we have to find the funding to do that, or we have to leave it to the voters to say, is that something that you want to pay for? So I'd like to see, you know, on the ballot a resolution saying, bringing a resolution forward to put it on the ballot. Should the borough have social services powers?
Thank you. Kent Colby.
And that is a question that's been brought up in the last 6 months or so at the borough, as does the borough really have the authority to use economic development funds to fund nonprofits? And as you said, that's something that needs to be addressed. Someday it may come back to bite us. There's room for a lot of, on the radio station we're always doing fundraisers for various organizations, and I think there's at least four different places that want to collect food. We do not have a centralized food bank in Ketchikan. It's the first community I've ever lived in that did not. So where they could service all of the nonprofits that do in fact provide meals and or services. So I think there's some room for streamlining there. The bottle tax, you gave us a bottle of water in a plastic container prior to the program, and 5 states on it collect 5 cents. It says right on the label. Why we don't do something like that, and yes, we've had all sorts of discussions about sin tax and everything else, and I remember back in, 98, 97, when the state added $1 per pack on cigarettes, and they said it was going to create a black market, and all the ferries would be used for it would be shuttling tobacco from Canada into Alaska. That didn't happen. We had the highest price of cigarettes at the time, and now we're down to nearly to the bottom because every other state jumped on it. So sin tax, hey, going to sin, pay for it, I guess. And there's and drinking water out of a bottle is not necessarily a sin, but it is another way to raise some additional revenue. You can call it a fee. It's a tax. We do have to increase revenue, and whether it's doing more taxes. The number of questions I got from kids last night asking about what I thought about the 7% sales tax or tax on marijuana. I'm saying, why do you care? But that's taxes. Yeah, we all hate taxes, but they're not going to stop us from consuming what we consume. If you're going to give a dance, you got to pay the band.
Thank you, Joel Jackson.
Well, the borough's record in economic development is at best spotty, and in my recollection, over the past 10 to 15 years, it's been pretty much abhorrent. It's been horrible, and so that doesn't mean it can't do better. I would suggest that the borough has a role in supporting nonprofits through proclamations, through letters of support. I know in my previous role, I went to the assembly and asked for support on a grant that we were writing, and they gave us that support. And I think that's where the assembly and the borough leadership can help nonprofits in particular. I do think with economic development, I would be a proponent of a nonprofit is a business. If somebody has a good business plan, they can go to a bank and get a loan. So if we're going to have an enterprise fund at the borough, it should be managed like a bank would manage that fund. And people that want to apply and get funds for their business or a nonprofit should just have to go through the same steps that everybody else has. And I don't think that's onerous or anything else, because if they have a serious need, they'll have already developed that plan. They'll have that information. And the borough should be a conduit, someone who's helping provide guidance, not necessarily providing the funding. And the borough does have substantial land holdings that they could use to lever if they wanted to get funds to match funds or to provide funding for economic development. Well, that's a question for the assembly, maybe for the voters as well. So I think there's a role to play with nonprofits, but I think that role is not necessarily as a pass-through for funds. I think in economic development, in the future, it needs to be more well thought out and more businesslike. Thank you.
And AJ Pierce.
Thank you. Yes, I do actually echo a little bit here what Mr. Jackson has to say about running it like a business. And you know, being able, again, to look at those that are already self-sustaining, that are already running the race of being able to, you know, run in their own lane. And those are really great examples. And I think that we really have a lot to learn from them. And I don't think there's enough conversation with them, you know. So, you know, having those examples and being able to learn from those that have that experience and be able to grow on that, that's really what I think that we should be looking at.
Thank you. And Alan Bailey.
Thank you. I would like to address just briefly the Economic Development Fund, in that we have attempted over the numbers of years that I was on the Assembly to try to make reasonable decisions as to what is economic development, and it was determined that we would, social services programs, even though we didn't have that authority, you know, that that would be considered important, you know, for our community, and we must maintain that level of service. I know that we were very interested in and did establish a grant for Americulture. That if that industry was ever to take off, and we have some of the cleanest waters in the United States, if Americulture was to in fact take off and begin self-sustaining, and there's been some issues, you know, that they've struggled, but they are continuing on and reporting as they have expected to, the amount of economic development that would occur from that would be amazing. I mean, it would be good paying jobs to our community and bring our, maybe bring some of our kids back to our home as well. I want to be specific in answering the question specifically that was asked, where's the money coming from? I have, once again, it was a common sense approach to this, in that I see that oftentimes we always look to ourselves to say, well, we need to tax this, we should tax that, here's the bottles, we never better go find some tax on marijuana or cigarettes. Well, those I refer to as low-hanging fruit. Is that really a good, sound, long-term practice that's going to sustain our economy for the years to come? What does sustain our economy is the tourism industry, and, of course, that's through CPV funding. As such, back in March 7th, 2001, was an attempt by our community to do a maritime or a passenger cruise excise tax. It failed 2-1, and that was during the beginning time of the CPV funding. But it failed primarily because it was a lot of greed and a lot of concern that it would scare off the tourists. So, and it was $5 a head. That was, you know, quite a bit of money back then, of sorts, for an individual. But it, being said that, my proposal is specifically that we would charge a service fee to the passengers coming off board of $1. The service fee would then offset that free bus ride that they get throughout, and because there is very specific language on CPV funding and with the Jones Act that you have to be very, it has to be regarding with infrastructure that's related to the tourism industry. We do give bus rides. There are those kinds of services, and clearly with the numbers of passengers that we have in our community, of 900,000 or up to a million, whatever the numbers are.
This week we'll hit a million.
It's substantial.
Aren't there bathrooms down on the dock?
That may be considered a service fee. But regardless, there's a way to offset that to remain legal, and that's, again, a common-sense approach, because I know Juno has got themselves in trouble with that, and that's not where we're going to go. So as such, you're going to acquire money from the tourism industry, which does not affect current businesses. It does not affect the population or the constituents that we represent. So that's one approach to this. Where are the funds coming from? $1 is not excessive, and it probably will not have a drastic effect on the tourism to make that determination that we can't afford this. So it's about volume and not being greedy, and trying to find sources other than trying to find bottles to tax or taxes. So that's item one. That's an approach that I would be making a recommendation. And whether or not I'm elected or not, I'm still going to bring it before the assembly. I think it's a reasonable approach, and it does account for a need that is in our community that's essential, I believe. The second item is, and it's unpopular, but yet it could be progressive, and it could be one item that we can do in a progressive manner and in a sequential manner. That is an increase of sales tax and limit on the one purchase item. Limit is $1,000 right now. In Juneau, that one item is $12,000. In Sitka, it's $3,000. In Wrangell, it's $1,500. And in Petersburg, it's $1,200. We don't compete with Wrangell or Petersburg. However, our one limit is right now is $1,000. And for every $500 that is increased, or if it were to be increased, for every dollar, $500, it equals $12.50 of additional income. If we were to raise that to $1,500, not $3,000, as if we were to go to an adjusted consumer index plan, that would be, we should be at our CIP, we should be about $3,000 right now. We're not. And we don't need to go there. We don't need to be greedy about this. But if it was brought in at $1,500, it may be an option. It's my second. It's not my most favorite. But the issue is that may have an effect on those persons who have not lower incomes, but less income to housing, and that would have an effect on them. The proposal would also be to leave them as is, not to completely exempt that, but to leave it at $1,000 for those people who are currently paying the $1,000 one-time service fee or the unit sales is what it is. So we would not be affecting the renters. We would acquire $12.50 per $500, and it's for luxury tax items. And that is another way to generate income that is not devastating to our entire economy. It's a common sense approach, and it's sequential, and it's in moderation. So that's kind of to answer Deborah's question specifically. That's just two of the ideas that I have that I think could have some merit. And again, it's with seeking with public input as well. But
there it is. Right. Ken?
That issue of raising the cap was actually brought up before the borough. Was it last month or the month before? And there was a significant number of business people who spoke out against it because of Amazon.com. They, you know, people will buy for $90 a year, and is incentive enough to wait for 3 days while it gets shipped to you. So you would have I don't disagree. I think we do need to raise it, but I do know that the business community is kind of vocal against it.
If I can respond, and I agree with Kent, he's absolutely correct. No question. We're going to be facing some times that's going to have to require some innovative ideas, and I think Susan said it very well. That there may be a shared pain with this, or there may be some sharing of concern or of addition, bringing in revenues to our community. What my approach has been is to simply try to take the most common sense approach that would take resources not necessarily from just any single source. I am opposed to excessive taxation, and the ideas of the sin tax thing is. I try to avoid that as a long-term solution. So that's where I stand, and I agree with Ken that there's a...
One other little comment on sales tax, if I may. We have a sales tax free day coming up on the 7th. And everybody loves it. It turns out to be the single largest retail day of the year in Ketchikan. The borough loses $65,000 on that day because of the free sales tax. But the argument is, would people take their permanent fund and buy Amazon? I'm not plugging. Versus shopping locally. It's amazing to me how 6.5% savings, because it's not sales tax, will get you to open up your wallet versus 25% on another sale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Kevin had a comment as well.
There is definitely the ethical dilemma, as you all have raised, about whether sin taxes should be used to fund other projects or whether they should actually just be used, for instance, should tobacco excise tax be used to fund tobacco reduction and education in the community. And there aren't easy answers on that, but I lean conservatively on that issue. But that's also ways we can find ways to fund nonprofits, getting back to that original issue, by putting out saying, hey, can we do that creatively through art or drama or one of the other programs in the community? Another thing I want to just say is that there's a lot of different opportunities for partnerships that we always talk about nonprofits doing things more effectively and efficiently than government can do it. Can we have some of the nonprofits provide some of the services at the rec center, partnership with Boys and Girls Club? I know when I was in St. Louis and Baltimore, they had partnerships with similar organizations there. And I know Boys and Girls Club, having volunteered there in 2009, struggled to find a home for a long time until the Lutheran Church opened their doors. Similar type of ideas. An organization I interned with in Baltimore actually had the city of Baltimore contract with the borough, contract with the nonprofit to schedule and organize a lot of the community meetings that were needed on issues related to development in the community. So those are some other ways that we can provide support and funding for nonprofits.
And then we did have a caller who had a question for AJ's in response to your comments. You had said that there are nonprofits that are successful without state, federal, borough, or city funding.
Yes.
And they were hoping for examples.
Sure, yeah. Pioneer Heights is one. Yeah. Yes.
For City Council on Cancer. Almost 100% of their money goes back to the community, and they do it all with fundraising. They have not, to my knowledge, gone before either the borough or the city for funding. However, now I'm going to get on a soapbox, the city charges them to use the Ted Ferry Civic Center. So we're funding the city.
There you go. And Alan had a follow-up.
It's not necessarily follow-up. But
we should probably wrap the particular topic up fairly soon. But
gotcha. But there's a group of people out there and business people that I just want to give credit to, and it's Community Foundation. And they're creating assistance to groups who help fund, and I think it's an incredible organization that's really trying to create the business community to try to help through their foundation. So just giving hats off to them as well.
So. Okay.
One last thing, and I've got to put my nonprofit director hat on for a moment, that a lot of people aren't always aware about with the with nonprofits is that when we're applying for grants in the community, one of the first questions when you're applying for something off the rock is, are you getting local support? Are local governments supporting you? And if you don't answer that yes, it's often a very big challenge. So that is the reason why there is need for some of the organizations to be able to go before the city and the borough.
Thank you. And we're going to move on to another topic, but this one is also similar in a way related to what we were talking about before with the sin taxes. The borough ballot this year is going to include a marijuana retail tax. What's your position on that ballot proposition and why? We'll start with Joel Jackson.
Well,
So I'll just state, straight up, I disagree with the sale of marijuana. Marijuana was legal when I was younger in Ketchikan. I think it's bad for you, just like I think smoking is bad for you and drinking is bad for you. And I have a hard time explaining to my kids why it's legal when we drive by there. So I want to state that. Now, that being said, it is legal, and I support taxing it. It gets taxed multiple times in the whole sales process, and I think I recall the first 32 hours that the shop was open downtown, the gentleman that runs it said he collected roughly $5,000 in sales tax, which equates to about $70,000 in sales in 32 hours. So obviously people are buying. But in the grand scheme of things, as a community, let's just say, for instance, we collect $500,000 or $800,000 a year between the city and the borough's budget. You know, that's less than 0.5%. You know, so it's really not that big of a bang for the buck, if you will. So I'm not opposed to taxing it. I think we should tax it more. But I also think that should be done thoughtfully over time and certainly coordinated with the city of Ketchikan. I do like the way that the borough approached the way they implemented or may implement the tax, so it's the same across the city and the borough.
Thank you. A.J. Pierce?
I am also for taxing as well. You know, I don't think that it should be just in the city. I think that it should be across the board for the borough and the city. And I think that we all should take a look at consumption, on-site consumption. There is, you know, tourists walking the streets, and it's just very frivolous. So I really do think that we should tax it, and I think that we should look at the long-term approach.
Thank you. And Kent Colby.
I have to share a story. 2 weeks ago, I was walking from Tongass over to Annabelle's, and a very well-dressed lady who had an umbrella, so I assumed she was a tourist, asked me if she could ask me a question with no judgment. Sure. She said, "Do you smoke pot?" I said, "No, but if you're looking for the pot shops, I can direct you." She said, "No, I found them already. It's just that I have to get back on the boat, and I have a joint that I haven't used. I'm trying to find somebody to give it to." So the on-premise consumption.
Well, certainly. You appear over 21, so.
Do I? I'm glad to hear it.
After the gold rush.
Barely.
So yes, I agree with AJ. I think on-premise consumption. We have on-premise consumption for alcohol. You can't drink alcohol in public places.
That's right.
So let's treat them equally.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerell.
Oh, and yes, to answer the question, I am in favor of the tax.
Okay.
Well, I'm not in favor. I never was in favor of marijuana shops. I was, you know, spent more than 10 years as a police officer in this town and arrested many people for growing and dealing marijuana, so I disagree with the whole idea of having them in the first place. That having been said, the voters in the state of Alaska approved this, and the there are laws and regulations in place so that they can have businesses open and selling. But I don't agree with a specific tax for a specific industry any more than I agree with fish box taxes or raising taxes on hotels and businesses, you know, the like. To me, I think there are long-term budget issues that we have to deal with in a planned way, and coming up with, you know, umpteen number of taxes to address a long-term issue, I just don't think is a good approach, and I don't think it's fiscally responsible. And I think we have to get to the point where we make a plan, we decide to stick with it, we can come up with new ideas for economic development and how to encourage business, but I don't think taxes is the way to do it, and I just disagree with taxing a specific business just for the sake of you know, raising money for a particular reason at the time.
Thank you. And Alan Bailey.
That raising taxes for general fund is, what are you going to do? You know, who, any given time, that changes hands to whatever they want to do. This was actually a very difficult question for me in a lot of ways. 32 years in the criminal justice system as superintendent of state correctional center, I have seen many years of what drug abuse and drug and or just people's choices people have made that affect people's lives. It doesn't mean people are bad. It just means sometimes people make choices, and sometimes there's consequences for those choices. And so I was opposed to marijuana. I did not vote for it at all when it first came on board. The North End voted against it. The South End voted against it. And the city voted for it. Thereafter, that's prevailed by the city. And my opinion at that point, as being on the assembly, no longer mattered the same, because as an assembly person, I'm a representative, not a dictator. And you have to leave your personal opinions. You may have them, but you have to represent your community. And it was very, really a difficult issue. Therefore, they tricked me and put me on the Marijuana Advisory Committee. I'm going, you got to be kidding. However, I'm going to be representing as, and in fairness, and I'm going to listen to the constituents. I'm going to listen to the issues that's brought before. The short version is that it's important to realize that when you start, and I again call it cherry picking, when you start picking out entities into individual items, and where does it stop? You can go tax sugar, so us big people can't eat our sugar anymore. There's many numbers of things that you can do to start picking, and then all of a sudden it becomes a moral issue. Or my opinion versus your opinion. I don't think I agree with marijuana, therefore I can impose upon my prejudices or my preferences. And I agree with Susan. I'm not in favor of that. What I am in favor of is trying to find other ways to be creative in developing long-term abilities to gather funds for essential services that we need in our community. And I think that requires study, time, thought, and discussion with the community. It's probably likely that the marijuana tax will likely be approved. I'm not going to foretell it, but for those people who do vote, there may be a way to acquire whatever numbers of dollars it is. When we were on that marijuana advisory committee, we also realized that the amount or the sum of money and the millions of dollars that they were expecting, like in Colorado, was not going to happen here in Ketchikan. People come to our community to enjoy the scenery, our beautiful town, and probably not go to a marijuana shop. So we were not expecting to have a lot of tourism, to just go right to the shops and start giving their money to our community. Probably more local sales. The other part that needs to be of some concern is that once you tax and continue to tax a particular item, then do you create a black market? And is it easier for an individual? And I think we figured out that you could probably grow your own and grow for those who do that, and it's legal and that's fine. Stay within bounds, they could grow more than you could possibly smoke, and for most people. So it's looking at the whole picture. And to speak and agree with Susan Pickerel, I would not want to tax the marijuana specifically. And if it, however, I would be open down the road if that became one of those issues where we have no ability to fund like organizations like WISH or some organization that was senior services. I would open those doors. But it's after careful consideration and careful discussion. I don't make – these are quick questions you ask, Layla, and it's like there's no quick answers. I mean, on the assembly, you really need to take the time to study the issues and then try to make a reasoned and informed choice.
Thank you. And Kevin Gatzy.
To be brief, I would definitely say that the issue in this election, in this vote on whether to increase by 5% the tax on marijuana, is about fairness and balance with the city. And one of the things I always want to be able to do is ask what's fair in the community, what's fair for all the businesses. And therefore, I do support it. I will be voting for that tax, but I will also be, I'm also glad we're sending it to the voters. It's an incredibly complex issue. In my day job, I work on the drug-free communities grant that's trying to prevent youth from using marijuana. They right now are going to marijuana instead of tobacco because everybody thinks it's a healthy thing. And I'll agree that there are maybe some health benefits, but not for youth. And taxes are one thing that will prevent youth from using it, but it will also send, and that's been proven at the state level, but it will also cause people to want to go underground. So finding that balance there. And I think 10% is probably a good number for that.
Thank you. The ballot issue is for 5, though.
I know, but, okay. but it raises 5% to get to 10%. I thought it was.
Intention is to not charge it within city limits. So exactly. It would be 5% across the board throughout the borough.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, fairness. Then.
Yes.
In addition to sales tax.
Right. Yeah. Yes. In addition to existing sales tax. And moving on to another question. Oh, and I do want to remind listeners this is a call-in show. So if you have a question, go ahead and call 225-9655. And my next question is, the Assembly and the School Board have improved their relationship in the last couple of years. How will you maintain that or make it even better? This time we'll start with Kent Colby.
It's really kind of, there's certain irony there that there is any discussion about that. There are certain politics that say we have to cut everything, and the most obvious things to cut are those that are going to make you squeal the most, from libraries to schools to whatever else. I think that education is paramount for our community. It should not even be a point of discussion, and we have an elected board that manages the school district. The discretion should be up to them. The borough should take their hats off to them for the job they do.
Thank you. And Kevin Gadsby.
My mom was a school teacher for 40 years, and so I grew up constantly at school with the after school meetings that she gave of her own time often to be able to help provide for the students. I know what the teachers and our staff do for our schools. At one point a few years ago, I was on the board of Tongass School of Arts and Sciences here, and I want to just say that we're going to do everything we can to support the schools, but also ask good questions in a way of partnering to try to find the best use of those resources in the community.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerel.
Well, I was listening to everybody's answers as we were going around the table, and I wrote on my notebook here, belt tightening. How do you do belt tightening and agree on both sides of the table, whether it be borough assembly or the school board, school district? How do you do that in a common sense approach where it gives everybody their respect that they're due, and everybody gets a chance to say, here's what we think are the important issues for us to face and agree together? So I think the more that we can do to sit down at lunchtime meetings and make a list of all the priorities and what's most important, and again, I keep coming back to the planning part of that. We have 32 weeks till our next budget is due before the Borough Assembly. In 32 weeks' time, I think we can meet with the community, with the school board, with the Borough Assembly, with the different groups. We provide over 27 different services in this community just on the borough side alone. And so we really need to do some priorities. And we always do knee-jerk reaction of, oh, my God, the state's going to
cut us by, you know, 25%, whatever it might be, you know, not provide, you know, those services, not do the capital improvement budget. So we know that it's coming. We need to really seriously get together and say, for Ketchikan, here's what we want. We have to provide these services first and then go down that list the same you would do with your own checkbook, your own household. What's important? Can we take our garbage to the garbage dump ourselves? Can we turn off our TV and not have to pay the cable fees? Can, you know, there are certain things that can be done, but it has to be done agreeing together. Because the one thing that I found as a school board member that was most frustrating was to hear borough assembly members saying, well, they don't need to do this and they don't need to do that, and we can cut activities and we can do those kinds of things. That isn't the way to approach you know, problem solving. It has to be an agreement. You come to the table, you compromise back and forth, everybody gives a little bit, and that belt tightening is a little bit easier when people can agree together. So the more that we can meet, plan, and respect each other's opinions, but come to a common agreement.
Okay. Thank you. And A.J. Pierce.
Thank you. I come from a long line of family in education. My grandmother, she was a teacher for 32 years. My father was one for 10. My mom was one for 8. And I have been a substitute teacher in 3 different states. So it's very near and dear to my heart. And I do believe, you know, Susan's right on the right path right here, talking about, you know, being collaborative and continuing that conversation in that round table. It's important for us to be a cog in that wheel and to extend those spokes out in as many different directions as we can, just to continue that collaborative conversation. So I really feel like that's the fundamental, is being able to bring innovative ideas and solutions to the table and continue that conversation in a healthy direction for the long term.
Thank you. And Alan Bailey.
Thank you. I'd like to I'd like to address, if I may, this change that has occurred in the recent period of time. And in part, it was due because the budget has now been codified as to exactly what the school can expect and would receive. I had the pleasure of being on the school liaison committee for several of the years, and worked, I thought, very closely with Superintendent Boyle, and clearly, I mean, he has my greatest respect for his constant advocation for the students, for the budget, and there were some tough times throughout the 6 years, no question. There were some debates and discussions that were in the papers about what was right and what was not, but there was never a lack of respect, and there was always, and certainly we would want to improve that, but it was contentious. And I think once the borough codified exactly what funds they can receive, the dust really settled, because now it's not an issue of the assembly saying, well, we think you should cut here and there, which is completely inappropriate. The school board has their job, and they have a tough job. So what happens is that you have a specific amount of money that we know that we can present to them. An example is you have, again, the reserve fund, which is $2.4 million. Appreciate that a great deal. You've got the 0.5 mil rate that is $6.9 million. You have the federal PILT payment in lieu of taxes, which is $960-some thousand. You've got the... it's called the Secure Rural School Funding. That is always in flux every year. You never know if you're going to get it or not. It's projected at $675,000. However, Senator Murkowski has indicated that, good luck, it will be declining, and you may see it by spring anywhere from $0 to $600,000. It's not clear. You have the school. I know the borough does pay the school insurance on the building, that's $75,000. And then, of course, you have your tobacco tax, which the school gets 85%, and that's $680,000. There's a specific set budget there. When it comes to the point where the school may need more money, we have a reserve account there. And throughout that period of time, and I can say I was really pleased There was a couple attempts to really cut the school budget substantially during my previous tenure, and I can be very, I am honored that I was a part of the vote that didn't allow that to occur, that the schools were properly funded. We do know they needed more money. There was no question, but you can only tax. And you say we have a population of 14,000 in our community, of which I would say on the high note, you have probably about 9,500 or so actually paying taxes in our community, because you've got 2,200 children in school plus 76 intensive care children. You've got 60-some fast-track children. So all that's subtracting, and then those who are not even in school. So just say, and I just give it a $10,000 bill, or 10,000 people are paying taxes. Of that 0.5 mils, if we all lived in the same house, that would be $1,449.27, give or take a penny, per person on taxes. And what I'm saying about that is that there is a revenue source that's constant. It's 100% of the property taxes that they receive, and that a lot of the dust has settled, one, because we have now codified, and they know exactly the money that they have right from the beginning, and there's not a dictation to say, well, you should cut this or cut that. This is the money you have. What can you do with it? Do you need more help? And that's going to be the approach I'm going to take if elected, say, what else do you need? What else can we do to help our children to be more successful, or to at least be able to compete in today's market? And those are important issues.
Thank you. And Joel Jackson.
Yeah, I've served on the board and school board, and was certainly aware of some of the issues that have been discussed. I think likely an area where the borough and the school district can maybe work a little bit better, or in the future work on things, is with the capital improvement list for the district, which they create every year, and they submit to deed, but making sure that's aligned with the community request that goes up to our legislative representatives. I think that is an example of where the borough could help the district. So if we do have a capital need in one of our facilities, that it is bumped up on that that list. Objectively, I'm kind of like most folks here. I think the borough doesn't really have a role in the budget except as a pass-through. There are some areas where they do share services. One would be the borough funds in part the public library, which is part of the library consortium, which the district is part of, and then also the shared risk pool for insurance is another one that has been, well, over time, mostly successful. There's been times where it's been negatively funded. I think that's the area where going forward, the district and the borough need to be aligned, and to an extent the city of Ketchikan as well, is making sure that when we're communicating as a community to the state and outside agencies, that we're one voice. And so I think the problem that came out of a lot of, whether it be the borough suing the state of Alaska for funding or efforts like that, really served to shoot our community in the foot. And I would really not be in support of anything like that. We need to be one voice when we're dealing with the state and funders.
Thank you. And again, to our listeners, this is a call-in show. I only have a couple questions left, and when I run out of questions, we're ending the show. So give us a call with your questions, 225-9655. And my next question is, what do you believe is the biggest mistake the Borough Assembly made over the last year? And this time we will start with Sue Pickerell.
Well, I think for me, the one that I heard the most about, I would say, is probably in dealing with the nonprofits. Again, it seems to me that we, in Ketchikan, and I've lived here all my life, so I've seen this over a number of years, it seems like we like to fight in public. And by fight, I mean we feel very strongly about the issues that are important to us. And the knee-jerk reaction is to have people in public come before the Borough Assembly and justify why their program should be funded and why somebody else's program should not be. And that really shouldn't be done in public. There is no easy way, and having watched the meetings where there were probably 100 people in the room and, you know, 20 different programs that they are having to beg for money and having to justify what they were doing, it's to me it was not a good process. I think there has to be some planning ahead of time too. Again, and I go back to I think social services power should be put on the ballot, should be put to the voters. Can we provide these services? Are we empowered to provide these services? We can partner with people in the community to provide those services, you know, for the borough, but I don't think that it should be done in the manner that it was done and people having to justify what they do. I know that many of the borough assembly honored what people, you know, the different programs that we're doing, but I just think it was not a good process, and we have to remember that planning ahead of time can take care of that, meeting and coming to some agreement, and also, you know, as Mr. Jackson said, you know, putting together, treating people as if this is a business, and doing it matter-of-factly and having a plan and a process in place that can be dealt with in a business-like fashion.
Thank you. And Joel Jackson.
Well, I'm not a big proponent of saying negative things unless I have something positive to add. So I would like to just say that one area I think the borough has made huge improvements on is in planning and zoning. And I've noticed this myself. The access to information online is exceptional. The staff there is very helpful. And what we have is a really something that didn't exist when I was a kid, which is actual zoning rules that are followed and applied throughout the borough, which is great. But that leads to my critique, or one of the critiques, is when you have a planning commission and you, as an assembly, ask them to apply or rule on a request, and then it comes back to you and you ignore it, I think that's a little disheartening, sort of going back to the school board issue. The reason these people are put on the planning commission, they're given the information, the authority to make decisions, and then the recommendation is put back to the borough, and then the assembly chooses. And I think, to me, that's disheartening when I see that. I also think, this is my own bias, if I'm on the borough assembly, and when I was on the school board, I didn't go and meet with staff. I think when you're an elected official and you're on a board, you do your business at the table, you communicate at the table with staff, and one-on-one meetings with staff generally lead to problems. And I think we've seen that recently with the assembly, with some disagreement about an art purchase at the airport. And I think those things can be avoided if assembly members simply act like assembly members and don't feel the need to go and micromanage staff. There's a process in place if the borough wants to replace a staff member that reports to them. So that would be my positive. Kudos to the planning department. The negative would be sometimes I'm discouraged by how the borough deals with the recommendations.
Was there a specific recommendation that?
No.
Okay. All right. And Alan Bailey.
If I may, I'm going to backtrack just briefly, and I'll be real quick about it. But Mr. Jackson's comment with regards to the lawsuit that occurred that cost us about $300,000, actually. And I agree with you on that. And I was pleased to be the one that did vote against that as well. So it became political, and that's unfortunate, but I knew that was where it was heading because I've had that experience with the state before working as a superintendent. I guess I want to go back further than just 1 year. I think my issue is throughout our history, it's many years ago we had economic development of $25 million. What have we done with that? Will somebody please tell me how many jobs have we created with this economic development?
Boy, those bowls were nice.
And so were the trees that grew. And there was attempt. And I'm trying to think of the right comment I made that actually got published in the paper. I said either we'd be considered innovative or idiots? And the mayor said, well, we've answered that question. and when we were trying to fund the mariculture. And because I was of great hope that we could create jobs with the mariculture, and still hopeful, but it's going to be a tough road. The Economic Development Fund has been mismanaged from the beginning, and that's truly sad. Nonprofits have come forward, and it was a fund that was used, be it right or be it wrong, but it was a necessary fund. It was available fund, and the nonprofits have become pretty much dependent on that. Unfortunately, when they began to start picking out nonprofits that they were going to completely eliminate, I could not be a part of that on the assembly and would not be a part of it. So we did a clean across-the-board cut, and that was approved. And that was hard because it directly affected the nonprofits who were greatly dependent on these monies, be it WISH, be it Senior Services, be it the arts programs. These are important programs that make our community what they are today. So the unfortunate part is what I'm scolding, and myself as well, was how the Economic Development Fund over the history has been used. And I wish that we had better foresight, and I wish we had fewer wood bowls. And I think it could have been handled differently, and then less dependent for the nonprofits as well. Or less dependence. So I think that's the part that I am a little bit disappointed on. And as I said, I think I do have a reasonable solution, a common sense solution to trying to find a way to help fund those back again. But I think we got to be careful about just simply opening the doors. And there has to be criteria. And I know when I sat on the Cooperative Relations Committee with the city, there was an attempt to collaborate and work together in establishing exact criteria for people to come forward in the nonprofit organizations and what they're creating, if they're creating jobs or if they're creating associate jobs to our community. And there was a specific process. So I would like to revisit that again. And I think the more we do with the city, the better our goals are shared. And I think it was spoken by Mr. Jackson, speaking of one like mine. The more we can do that, the better.
Okay. Thank you. And A.J. Pierce.
Well, I'm not one to lay blame or point fingers. I really do believe that the Economic Development Fund is something that, you know, we could have definitely taken a better look at. And, you know, perhaps we can approach that in a way of investing and being able to possibly pull interest from some kind of investment. You know, there's smarter approaches that we can take, and I'm really excited to be able to work with the Borough Assembly, the city, you know, and be able to have more of a collaborative look at that, more than a one-way view.
Okay. Thank you. And Kevin Gatzi.
Mr. Bailey, I think you took the words out of my mouth.
Amen.
I will say that, you know, I've watched the borough, I've testified before the borough, and the city so many times. And when I came here in 2007, I really felt like that the borough was the most more functional and the city was less functional. And I actually feel in many ways like that has changed over the past few years. And that's the reason why I said I want to be able to put my name in the hat to be able to offer what I can to try to fix that. And a lot of that centers around the economic development issues in the community. A couple of examples in this past year are that with the nonprofit grants that went before the borough, we had a lot of different nonprofits that were going for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. There was one grant for $1,000 that was put in this year by Ketchikan Youth Initiatives, which I was formerly a board president of 2010 through 2012. It was for $1,000 to create youth economic development and train youth in jobs, work skills. And if that's not economic development, I don't know what is. And it's $1,000. You know, they're sure that's, but when you're talking about a huge millions of dollars of budget, that can be something that we can do to support our youth. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you. And Kent Colby.
So I'm not going to identify any particular thing in the past year, but commenting on the economic development funds, I remember that we got $46 million when we when the pulp mill closed. Wrangell got 24 some million dollars. Wrangell has a golf course, whether that's good, bad, right, wrong, or indifferent. Ketchikan does not have a veneer plant. So hindsight is 20/20. A lot of the projects that came before the borough appeared to be good, maybe even a panacea. They didn't pan out. We just need to be very proactive. The year that they were talking about doing a veneer plant, GCI laid a new fiber optics cable between Anchorage and Seattle, and they run a spur over to Juneau. I called the CEO of GCI and said, why don't we have one in the Ketchikan? And I put him on the radio live, and he said because he, when they did a survey in Ketchikan, there were only three people who thought we needed that kind of infrastructure. We wanted a veneer plant. We didn't see technology as being part of our future. With that, a little bit of lobbying on the radio, they eventually did run a spur into Ketchikan. So we now have fiber optics. We need more bandwidth than what we've outgrown what has been delivered to us already. We're maxing it out. So we should do anything and everything we can to increase that part of the infrastructure. And I'll go back to my opening comments about economic development. You know, we have technology is clean industry, and there's lots of industry, a lot of the firms out there looking for places to go. I did a research project a dozen years ago with Microsoft on one particular product and where their call centers were. Their tier one call center, if you called up and said, this isn't working, your call landed in Nova Scotia, in a little town of less than 1,000 people. They started out with a call center of 75 people, and Deborah, I know you're going to tell me call centers are low pay, but these are secondary jobs maybe. They're certainly all their jobs for the year round, but now that call center, at the time I did this, was up to 250 people. Almost 25% of the working population in that town was working at a call center. So those kinds of businesses can work well. They don't have to be 250 people. They can be very small people. Did you know that Ketchikan Public Utilities, KPU Telecommunications, call center after hours is in North Carolina? Simply local, simply brilliant. Why don't we have that call center here? Why don't we hire a half a dozen people that can manage not only KPU, but everybody else in Southeast Alaska, just because they don't solve any problems, they just take your information down. So technology is a big issue. Power is a big issue. Our water could be a big issue depending on the kind of business that wanted to come in. Here's a thought for you when we talk about you want to do a head tax on tourists. There are communities in Minnesota along the north shore of Lake Superior that have a separate tax for unoccupied properties, particularly if they're not occupied for 6 months out of the year, they pay twice as much tax as a property that is occupied for 12 months out of the year. They wanted to get rid of the seasonal businesses that come in, take the profits, and leave and close the doors. They wanted to get rid of the vacation people who come in and buy big, expensive homes and then don't stay around. That might be something that we could consider for additional revenue. But bottom line is there's all sorts of new industry that could be... Somebody brought up a while back that maybe we should have fishing licenses, permits, benefit locals so we don't have all of our fish being caught by fishermen who are licensed down south. Little things like that that's actually a big thing, could be positive
economic growth for the community, and all the other things we've talked about.
Okay. And then my follow-up question to that question is, what's the best decision that the borough has made in the last year? And this time we'll start with A.J. Pierce. It's a lot of pressure to go first.
It sure is. And coming back in 2015, I've got a lot to research and bring up on, you know. One of the best things, I think, can you come back to me?
I can come back
Thanks.
To you.
Thanks.
Alan Bailey.
Without question, codifying the regulations and/or our borough code that gives specific language to our school district, that gives specific amounts of money and how that is processed, and so that there's no more confusion about that. That this is one, this is 100% what you have. That they can begin working on their budget much earlier. I know Susan said, you know, we're waiting always to the last minute to do budgets, and often it's because you don't know what the state's going to be up to. So I without question, that has been of help. It has calmed the waters greatly, and it has provided clarity to our community and what we have and what we can do with our education system. So I think that really is a positive thing that has happened.
Thank you. And Kevin Gatzi?
I would say that the best decision is the change is hiring Mr. Duran, first of all. I've been impressed with his work, and I'm also very impressed with the fact that he has had the vision to come in. When he came in, he asked every department to put proposals together to reduce expenditures by 10%. I believe I'm correct on that. And I really found that to be important, and to help show that it can be done, the belt tightening can be done per department. Now, I will say I didn't agree with all the decisions the staff made, and I would have been asking questions there. One of the ones we had was the rec center closing a couple of hours early really impacted a lot of youth in the community, and almost every head was shaking when I talked about that issue last night with the seniors at the high school. But I do really like the idea of that action and what he's bringing.
Thank you. And Joel Jackson?
Actually, there's quite a few. Probably the most recent is the borough just sent, along with the city and the community, sent up a list to the state of capital improvement priorities for the community. And number one on that was finishing work at the shipyard. And full disclosure, my oldest son works at the shipyard. But of all the economic growth engines we have, probably commercial fishing aside, that one has probably the biggest impact on the community. Vigor Industries is 5,000 employees and growing, likely to become a public company at some point. This is the real deal. And so we as a community, and of course Ada as a partner, need to make sure that we prepare them for what Kent was talking about, the North Passage. So I think that was a pretty big deal. Probably the best decision, most recent decision anyways.
Thank you. And we'll go back to A.J. Pierce.
Thank you. Being able to be involved and sit down in those borough assembly meetings here just recently, I've been to every borough assembly meeting since I've had my hat in the race. And just really being able to absorb and see how they're open-minded, and they're really taking an approach to listen to the community all the way around. And I value that, and that's why I want to be a part of the borough assembly. You know, being able to be a part of that bigger picture, and I understand that there are so many issues that are really tough to talk about, really tough to think about. And just the approach of the Borough Assembly as a whole is very encouraging as we move forward in the near future on those really great solutions that we're going to bring to the table to make a better Ketchikan.
Thank you. And Kent Colby?
I would agree that the relationship between the school board and the borough has made big leaps and bounds in the past 18 months. We had a series of, I'd call them debates, but only one side would show up at a time, with a school board on one week on First City Forum saying the borough is stiffing us this way, and the borough on the next week saying, and they deserve it, and, you know, back and forth. And so we called for a unification. All right, let's have both sides on the program. And by golly, they got together and worked it out before they got on the program. So I definitely was, it was fun to watch, but it was kind of nerve-wracking, but it was good to see that we made some progress there. And the relationship this year, as they talked about budget, was 180 degrees opposite of what it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, there's no drama.
Yeah, didn't make for good news, did it?
I was fine with that.
Yeah.
And Sue Pickerel.
Well, I would say, Kevin took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say kudos to the borough manager and his directors for basically being the role model for the community. If you're going to tell people that we may not be funding you this year, and then to take that initiative and look at their budgets and cut their employees by, you know, three positions, and actually raising money in some of the departments. And one particular, I know the transportation department has gone out and got $100,000 grant in addition to the $1 million grant that they have for transportation. That is amazing, because I remember this is like 2003, when lots of people were complaining because of the transportation, the buses were costing us money and the ridership was down, and it really has turned around, and some of the other departments have, you know, are raising revenues. And I know I think at the airport, and you know, at a time when our you know, the retail sales are flat and have been flat for years and years and years. So you know, I really applaud that leadership in our community and that acknowledgement that if we're going to ask people to cut their budgets, we need to be the first to step up and do so. So I applaud them for that.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I'm kind of out of questions, so we'll move on to closing statements. And this time we will start with Alan Bailey.
I have nothing prepared of any kind like that, but I just want to say that before us here, I'm sitting here watching other individuals here who are very qualified, who I'm glad that there's six people running for office. It gives the opportunity for the community to take a look at all of us, and I think each one of the candidates here have something to offer, and each one has qualities that and it is for service, I believe. I'm not going to speak on everybody's behalf, but it is for service to others. And we're stepping our foot forward, and we're saying we want to be, we want to help, we want to make a better community, we want to be a part of a solution, not create problems and then, or create solutions and find the problem. We want to be a part of something that's important to us, and it's our community. I've had the pleasure of raising my children here. They're grown, and they've come back to Ketchikan, which I am incredibly proud of. After being in New York and being in Los Angeles, I'm going, are you out of your mind? And so they've come back, and they're contributing to our community. And I'm a proud dad on that one. So, but I want other families to have the opportunity as well, to have that, the opportunities for jobs, the opportunities for education. And I just want to be a part of that process and service to others. And it sounds corny, but that's basically who I am. I've served my country during the time of the Vietnam War. I've served the state of Alaska as for 32 years in the Department of Corrections, 20 of which was the superintendent of the State Correctional Center here in Ketchikan. Served with the Alaska National Guard for numbers of years, and jumped out of airplanes. I was crazy. But and then had the opportunity to serve our community as two terms with the assembly, and also 1 year of that was as a vice mayor. And I throughout that period of time, I sat on numbers of committees, and I thought that I had an opportunity to make a difference. And I was glad to be on those committees. Sometimes they were difficult, but you always, and I always believed that I had respect for the others and those who had different opinions than myself. I think that's really important as well, and to be able to listen and understand that you don't have all the answers. No one of us has all the answers, but the answers combined is with our community as well. And that is, you know, listening to people, and we represent, and that's what I really believe. We don't dictate, we represent. So it's a pleasure to have the opportunity to run. I'm pleased to have the company here tonight, and I think, again, these are each one of these folks or the candidates here are qualified people who want to help and want to be a part of helping our community. So I just want to thank folks for the opportunity to even consider, and please, if you get the chance, please vote for a candidate of your choice. Thank you.
Thank you. And Joel Jackson.
Yeah, especially if your choice is me. I would just say that I'm a runner, and I've run the Shelter Cove Road, or a good part of it, run through White Rock or development up through the Ravenswood development up to Silvis Lake, you know, Perseverance. I've run everywhere. I run Gravina, all the roads over there. I've been on every part of the road system in this borough, and then, of course, outside, which most of the borough is not what you see here in our beloved Bear Valley or in the Rock where KRBD is. I think that we need to have people on the borough assembly who have a vision for the future of our community, that strongly believe in the future of our community and are willing to advocate and make tough decisions that maybe right now don't make sense, but will, I mean, to what Kent said earlier, down the road, set us up for success in the future. And I believe I'm the kind of person that will make those decisions. I would also add that one thing I've learned serving on boards over the years is that sublimating your own opinion to the board's will is generally the right thing to do. Boards make better decisions than individuals, and I've had that proven to me many times when I thought it was right. And as my mom always tell me, sometimes it doesn't matter if you're right. So I, again, like Alan said, I would encourage you all to vote and certainly and take your children with you when you go to vote. Thank you for your time, everybody.
Thank you. And Sue Pickerel.
Well, thank you, Layla, for having us all here. And I would agree with you, Alan. I think excellent choices sitting at this table, people that are very well reasoned and thoughtful. And every one of them, in one way or another, has provided this community with good service, good citizens and great choices. I am running for borough assembly because I've lived here all my life, and I believe in giving back to your community. And this community has done well by myself, by my family, and I have been in public service for more than 30 years. With that comes experience. I know this community. I know the issues in this community. And probably most importantly, I care about this community. And I'm going to reiterate again, we have not yet seen the best of Ketchikan. There is a bright future. And I want to make sure that that my children and grandchildren will have a place to, you know, to be able to come home to be able to live and raise their children. And I think we have a myriad of possibilities coming in the next few years. Even though there have been deficits, we've been down this road before with the pulp mill closing. People didn't give up. People didn't move away. The people that cared about Ketchikan stayed here and carried on, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to work through this. And I am not depressed about the budget deficit in Juneau, because I think we will always have issues to deal with regard to our state budget. I think we have a commitment to people in this community to provide good services, and there are good employees working for the borough. And I think as a borough assembly member, I would really enjoy working you know, with other borough assembly members and with the, you know, the staff to make sure that those services continue. And we do it in a fiscally responsible, open, transparent manner and have listening ears for the public and soliciting their opinions. And when we have to, if we're going to have to raise taxes, bring that to the voters. Those issues, social services powers, bring those to the voters because the voters are informed and they'll make the right decisions. And that's where it should be. So I would ask for your vote on October 3rd, and I appreciate your time this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. And Kevin Gadsey.
To echo all that has been said, I really trust the voters to make the right decision among the three people best team members to be able to move our community forward. I think all the people at this table I've worked with in some capacity in the past few months or past few years, and I have deep respect for all of them. I do want to close by sharing a story from my personal experience a few years ago when I was off the rock. After I finished my master's degree, I went to Missouri for a year and was as I said earlier, I was a lobbyist for social and health care and disability issues out of St. Louis to Jefferson City. And they hired me and said, you'll definitely get on, you'll definitely have a full year before you have to go to the Capitol and talk to any legislator. Yeah, that lasted 2 weeks. I was dropped in the middle of a legislative session. The legislative session had begun in January 15th. I was at the Capitol by middle of February. And the beginning of April, I had been running and learning and everything as fast as possible, working to get several bills passed and several issues funded in the budget. We had a meeting of the House of Representatives Budget Committee and that went to 2 in the morning, and it was the entire budget. I mean, we're talking, I think I had probably several hundred pages on my lap that night, and it went to 2 in the morning, and the head lobbyist for the healthcare issues in Missouri chose to call me after that meeting at 2:30 in the morning and asked me what happened there. And he said, and his name is Brian Colby, he said, Kevin, after I told him a 15-minute spill, he said, I believe you know this material as effective, as much, if not more so, than people who have been here for 20 years in the Capitol. And I like to think that I have that skill to be able to read budgets and read scenarios and understand issues quickly. And I think I attribute that to my time as a journalist, to be able to pick up on those issues very quickly. So I'm just putting that out there. With that said, we had a really good thing going in Missouri, but when Ketchikan called, when the Wellness Coalition called and said, please come home, and there was not even a question about that, I came home to try to help Ketchikan, and we rebuilt several of the task forces, and I'm pleased with that. And I want to just be able to continue to make Ketchikan a better place. I'll announce this on the air. I'm looking again at considering adoption, and I want this to be a place where I can raise my child in the near future. But I do, unlike some people, I do want them to leave and go do Peace Corps, go do AmeriCorps, and see the world, but then come home to raise their kids and bring back that knowledge to make Ketchikan even better.
Thank you. And Kent Colby.
I have been in private enterprise most of my adult life. There's some question whether it was private when I was in Antarctica because I was working for a contractor in a private company that contracted to the U.S. government, the National Science Foundation. So, but aside from that, I have been, I was actually on the Transportation Committee years ago talking about a bridge to somewhere. I have been part of economic development committees here and in other states, and we have enticed new businesses to come into the area through
tax incentives to good rates. By more than anything, it was always when we could show we had the workforce to support them. And we have a good workforce here. The shipyard is a evidence that this community can evolve. We now have both the university and the high schools doing trades training so that we have people that can go to work at the shipyard, because that we kind of had a deficit here a few years ago of welders and electricians, and it's heartwarming to see that they're filling those positions with local candidates. And other businesses like that, whether we need to go that big or we just need a lot of smaller businesses to help fill in the void and increase our tax base. And that's one of the big things that, you know, we're talking about. Where are we going to get money for all these kinds of things? Increase the tax base with more jobs and more year-round jobs. And tourism is great, and it'll probably be number one in this community for a long time to come. And, again, a little sidebar. My wife's family in Utah all got together and said, we want to go on a cruise. How many people want to go with us? And everybody raised their hands and said, okay, so where are we going to go? And I voted for the Mediterranean. Every single one of them wanted to go to Southeast Alaska. I took a cruise to Southeast Alaska. So we have an appeal for people who want to visit, and we have a lot of people who come on those cruises who come back independently. I have a vacation rental, and many of them were their first visit to Ketchikan was on a cruise, and then they come back for other things, including several, at least two this past year, that relocated into Ketchikan because their first exposure was with a cruise ship. So all in all, I'm for economic development, economic diversity, and getting along. That should be enough said.
Thank you. And A.J. Pierce.
Thank you. And thank you so much for hosting tonight. And I just want to personally say thank you to all of my running mates. It takes courage. I've never done this before, so I'm pulling courage out from every single pocket I can find. I have not ran for public office before, and I'm learning at a fast pace. And I just want to publicly say thank you to everyone in Ketchikan who is supportive of me running for the borough. It's extremely humbling. And those who have supported in the campaign and have been out there and been beside me and believe in who I am as a person and what I stand for. I'm extremely transparent, and I'm super passionate in whatever I do. And anybody who stands beside me in town can guarantee that. And so I really look forward to sitting with a large group of people on a big scale with the city and the borough and continue that conversation all the way around. So I just want to say thank you to Ketchikan.
Thank you very much. And that wraps up this evening's candidate call-in forum on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey. Thanks to the listeners who called in and to our candidates for Borough Assembly, A.J. Pierce, Alan Bailey, Kevin Gadsey, Joel Jackson, Kent Colby, and Sue Pickrell. Join us next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for an on-air forum featuring Ketchikan City Council candidates. The local election is Tuesday, October 3rd. Please remember to vote. Good night.